affiliates. Head on with Bob Kincaid in 1 minute. Mark. Affiliates, head on with Bob Kincaid in 30 seconds. Mark.
Till another year. Well, what is this that I can't see with ice cold hands taking hold of me? Well, I am death, none can excel. I'll open the door to heaven or hell. Oh, death, someone would pray, could you wait to call me another day? The children prayed, the preacher preached, time and mercy is out of your reach. I'll fix your feet till you can't walk, I'll lock your jaw till you can't talk. I'll close your eyes so you can't see this very hour, come and go with me. Death, I come to take the soul, leave the body and leave it cold. To drop the flesh off of the frame, the earth and worm both have a claim. Oh, death. Oh, death. Won't you spare me over till another year? My mother came to my bed, placed a cold towel upon my head. My head is warm, my feet are cold, death is moving upon my soul. Oh, death, how you treating me? You close my eyes so I can't see. Well, you're hurting my body. You make me cold. You run my life right out of my soul. Oh, death, please consider my age. Please don't take me at this stage. My wealth is all at your command, if you will move your icy hands. Oh, the young, the rich or poor, all alike me, you know. No wealth, no land, no silver, no gold, nothing satisfies me but your soul. Oh, death. Oh, damn, won't you spare me over till another year? Won't you spare me over till another year? Won't you spare me over till another year?
This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid, and on Wednesday evenings we usually, in a tongue-in-cheek sort of fashion, well, we have our prayer meeting edition. Well, this is that prayer meeting edition, and there's nothing funny about it. Right after I got off the air last night, news began to circulate that 11 out of, or rather that 12 out of the 13 miners trapped at Sago Number 1 in Upshur County, in the mine there, in the depths of the earth, that 12 were, and the word that was used most frequently, were miraculously alive. CNN carried it. MSNBC had it. Fox ran with it. It was all there. It was all there. And that persisted for a couple, 3 hours. It began being reported on national radio newscasts. 12 out of 13 trapped miners miraculously found alive. And at the church, the Little Baptist Church, the Little Sago Baptist Church, across the street from Sago Number 1, a tiny speck in the empire of Wilbur Ross Jr., Sago Number 1, at the church there, they sang. And at the church there, the bells pealed out in joy for the miracle to which they had been party. And it did go on for hours. 2 hours, 3 hours. The loved ones gathered in the church were told that the survivors didn't want to go straight to the hospital, that they said they wanted to be carried to the church, to those who loved them best, that they might see them before they went on. They were told this. They were told. And yet, 2-3 hours in, the word began flashing around. It was all a horrible mistake. There is but one survivor, and he, Randall McCloy, Jr., is clinging to life. What a horror. In the midst of it all, the governor of the state of West Virginia, Joe Manchin, was in the church, jumping and hosannaing along with the rest of the crowd who believed that they had been party to a miracle. And he repeatedly told them, you see, miracles do happen. And they believed him. Lord, Lord, they believed him. Perhaps the best impression of what happened comes from Anderson Cooper of CNN. They have developed a real ability at CNN for getting him to situations where things just don't go quite right. And so Anderson Cooper described the scene as he observed it once the news was known that in fact it was all a lie, all a fraud, that 12 out of 13 were in fact dead. He said, he described the scene as he saw it, and we'll talk, hear him first.
We have seen a number of police vehicles moving up in the direction of the mine. There are a number of very angry people here, and I can tell you a few of them have told me off camera. There has been talk, a lot of very aggressive talk about what they would like to do to the mine officials in this area.
Indeed. Indeed. Now, the first thing that Anderson Cooper said was that, I see a lot of police cars. Do you know why that is? Do you know why? Now, back up. Because at the time that the families were told that the people whom they loved were alive, the time between that moment and the moment that the coal company knew that all but one were dead was 20 minutes. But it took the next hour and 40 minutes. It took the next hour and 40 minutes to get the SWAT teams in place. Because once again, government feared its people. Because those aggrieved human beings wanted to lash out. And the first priority was to protect the mine and protect the company. So it took those 2 hours to get the SWAT teams in place in case any of those bereaved human beings would happen to rise up on their hind legs and demand that they be treated like human beings. It took 2 hours to get the SWAT teams in place. They were positioned along the road near the church. One man had to be wrestled to the ground when he lunged at the mine thugs who had lied to him. Fist fights broke out in the church when it became apparent what the lying, the extent, the depth, the totality of the mendacity in which the company had engaged. Do you understand? Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed at all. It's 2006. It might as well be 1906 in the New River coal fields when the baton and gun-wielding thugs would line up along the city streets to make sure that the workers damned well stayed in their place. Nothing has changed. In the newspaper today, there are comments from West Virginia House Speaker Bob Kiss, who says, well, we may have some new legislation out of this. We don't need new legislation, Bob. We don't need new legislation at all. We just need for workers to have the right to stand up and demand that they be treated fairly. Because, you see, and this is kind of the difference here, had this been a union mine, when that black damp or that white damp, when that puddling death that gathers in the mines, when that became known, any union worker could have called that safety violation in and known that he would have been protected against any sort of hate, the kinds of hateful retaliation that non-union mines are so well known for. Because, you see, they have violations in union mines, too. But you know who turns in those violations most of the time? Union miners. Looking out for their brothers and sisters in the depths and bowels of the earth. Union miners look out for one another. Non-union miners do, too. But if they dare stand up and say, boss, that hole ain't safe, I ain't a-goin'. The boss says, that's right, you ain't, and you ain't coming back neither, boy. Collect your severance pay if you got any coming, and get out of here, and don't come back. We don't like your kind hereabouts. Now, bear in mind, MSHA law, the Mine Safety and Health Administration, MSHA law says that a retaliation against a worker for reporting a safety violation is actionable, and that the worker may have relief against the company and may have his back pay and may be forcibly rehired. Yes, it does say that. And all laws are always written for the company. Because if that man on that non-union job is fired, it will take him a year, 2 years, to have his case heard and to receive something approaching an idea of justice. And in the meantime, in those 2 years, children go hungry, rent goes unpaid, power bills, the utilities get turned off. Because that lone coal miner from that non-union operation has nowhere to turn. This is the situation that led up to the explosion at Sago Number 1. And while we're at it, tell you what. Let's stop calling it Sago Number 1. Let's know it for what it is. It's the Katrina Mine. The same level of abject disdain, unconcern that swirled in the foul and fetid waters of New Orleans in the wake of and aftermath of Katrina, the same thing obtained near Tallmansville, West Virginia, at the International Coal Group's Sago No. 1 Widowmaker. Did the company have anything to fear? Was it really necessary to position marksmen to stand against them in case the company and the money was threatened? People very seldom stand on their own hind legs. And I hate to tell you this, it breaks my tiny heart to tell you this, nothing will change out of this. Nothing. Nothing. Safety violations will continue to pile up at other International Coal Group mines. And other miners will die. You see, you gotta understand, within the way that the government categorizes things, it's only a mining disaster if five or more human beings live their life. So, as long as the miners are dying off one or two at a time, baby, we won't call it a disaster now, will we? No, because the government and the law says it isn't. It isn't a disaster when one worker dies. It's only a disaster when enough workers die that somebody shows up with a microphone and a camera and makes the Bennett Hatfields of the world dance and try to answer questions. And remember, he's been briefed. He's been briefed by the corporate counsel for the International Coal Group. He's been told what not to say. Already those three hateful words are being bandied about in the press. What happened? Was it an act of negligence by the International Coal Group? Or was it just, and here are those three words, was it just an act of God? Because, you see, workers, when they think that their loved ones have survived, they thank Almighty God for the survival. On the other hand, God gets used like a cudgel by the coal company. Because when workers die, when human beings die, when innocents die, the coal company gets on the phone to its lawyers in Charleston at Jackson and Kelly, or Spillman and Thomas, or Casto and Cheney, or Robinson and McElwee, or Rice Bowles. They get on their lines to the lawyers, and the lawyers say, "Don't worry, boss man, we'll call it an act of God." That's how it works. That is how it works. And as I have said on time after time after time, there are many names for God, and very few people recognize that God is a God of irony. And yet God is a God of irony, and it was on display in Upshur County. How many years have we here in West Virginia been told that we must have workers' compensation reform? That the state need not be in the workers' compensation business, and it needs to be turned into a private entity. And that is the nail that Joe Manchin drove through the legislature last year, and one after another, so-called Democrats, as well as their Republican their enablers, got in line and tore down West Virginia's 100-year-old workers' compensation system to create a private company. Have you been reading the newspaper, Sunshine? Do you know what one of the first acts of this brand-new workers' compensation private company is? Do you know? If you don't, I'll tell you. The first act of the new privatized West Virginia workers' compensation system was to give a great, big, yummy toothy, tasty rate cut to the coal companies. And also tucked away in the new workers' compensation system is a dedicated determination to make sure that those injured and maimed and killed in West Virginia industry have to fight a little bit harder to get their just compensation. Oh, it was a beautiful scheme, and it took effect on January 1, and the mine blew up on January 2. And now the families have to fight a little bit harder with those lawyers in Charleston just to get the blood money from the coal company that they have coming to them. And meanwhile, off in the offices in Manhattan of Wilbur Ross Jr., a waiter pours another glass of Cabernet. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
My jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops. I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who will work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
When you have a stroke, you may not even notice it right away. But then, time passes, and the symptoms get worse. One minute you feel fine, and the next, your speech could be slurred or not make sense. One side of your body might become numb. You might see double. You drop the TV remote because you can't hold up your arm. That's because after a stroke, every minute you don't get help is another minute that your brain is being starved of oxygen. The warning signs of a stroke include sudden numbness or weakness of the face, arm, or leg, sudden trouble seeing, speaking, or understanding. If you experience any of these warning signs, call 911 immediately, because time lost is brain lost. Visit strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE today. A public service announcement from the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
My head upon your breast.
Welcome back. 28 minutes before the hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. I should note the phone numbers. Just because I'm rambling on is no reason that you can't. The phone number, of course, 877, the number 4, Head On, 877-443-2366. Alternatively, 304-658-3333. And email is easy too, bob@headonradio.com. I have received a stack of emails in the last 24 hours from people expressing their condolences. And we do certainly appreciate that and accept them in the spirit and name of the families and loved ones and friends of the victims at Sago, West Virginia's very own little Katrina. Now, I've got sound tonight from the CEO of International Coal Group, a fellow named Bennett Hatfield. But we're not going to get to that just yet, because Bennett Hatfield isn't the man who makes International Coal Group go. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know already that the man who makes International Coal Group happen is a billionaire corporate raider vulture by the name of Wilbur Ross Jr. And, you know, as we pause to consider the 12 who died in Sago number 1, we ought to also pause to consider that great man, that giant of industry, who brought it to us. Wilbur Ross Jr., billionaire. In the last few years, he's made a hobby of sorts of acquiring bereft, bankrupt companies and demanding concessions from the workers and making a rat-kill fortune in the process. You know, we've seen how it happens. We're used to it. One of these Manhattan corporate raiders goes in, picks up a company for a song, squeezes the workers until they squeal and bleed, sucks all the money out of it that they possibly can, and then moves on. That's what Wilbur Ross Jr. does. Now, he didn't start out acquiring coal businesses. That sort of happened as, shall we say, a happy accident. Wilbur Ross Jr. created International Steel Group before he created ICG. And he made the International Steel Group from the ashes of the United Steelworkers and Bethlehem Steel. And you know what? When he took over Bethlehem Steel, as it turned out, Bethlehem Steel had themselves a few little coal mines down in Virginia. You know, that's what everybody calls us here. No, we're West Virginia. But yeah, there were some West Virginia coal holdings of Bethlehem Steel. And here's the fun part. He bought these companies. He made his money back 14 times over in 2 years. Man, this guy is good. 14 times over in 2 years, he made his money. And then what did he do? This great American financier? Why, he sold it to an Indian group. He sold his International Steel Group to a company from somewhere in India. Oh, it just makes you want to stand up and sing the national anthem, doesn't it? Yes, it does. To Mr. Ross, it's all a game. And we're just little, you know, working people. They're just little pieces on a chessboard. And what did he say in the newspaper Tuesday morning? Yeah. We have a great safety record. We've won awards. No, it was only after he had tidied up the steel market in the United States that Mr. Wilbur Ross Jr. moved into coal. He partnered International Coal Group. International Steel Group, International Coal Group. Nobody accused Mr. Ross of being needlessly creative. He partnered up ICG with Massey Energy. And they moved on the bankrupt Horizon Energy Corporation. and they moved into the bankruptcy court and gave a long and impassioned speech about how they couldn't possibly afford to purchase Horizon Energy Corporation unless those liabilities were stricken from the books. 'Cause you see, when a corporate billionaire financier and a multi-millionaire coal baron like Don Blankenship get together and talk about working people, they describe them as liabilities. You understand? Of course you do. Liabilities. Blood, sweat, sinew, and bone. Liabilities. Not people. Not workers, not human beings, liabilities. And the bankruptcy judge just grinned. And he said, "Why, yes, Mr. Ross, absolutely, Mr. Ross, certainly, Mr. Blankenship. How can I help you, Mr. Blankenship? May I kiss your feet, gentlemen? Oh, what a horrible list of liabilities Horizon Energy has." Those terrible liabilities, those god-awful liabilities, those crippling liabilities. We must get rid of those liabilities for you, Mr. Blankenship. We must get rid of those liabilities for you, Mr. Ross. And with the stroke of a pen, miners who had worked for Horizon Energy for 30 years and more were thrown into the road. "We're sorry, sir. You're a liability. You don't need that pension, do you?" "Yeah, you've mined coal for 35 years, brother. Maybe you can find another job doing something else. Maybe somebody else will front you up a pension for 4 years' work, or two. Healthcare? Well, hell, you're just about played out, boy. Why don't you just go and die? After all, you're not a person. You're a liability." And those miners were thrown in the road. But wait, it gets better, you know. It does. It gets ever so much better. Their wives and children were thrown in the road, too. Yes. And not just the ones who were working there at Horizon Energy. No, God, no, that would be too easy. We gotta screw the old people, too. Yeah. Because the retired ones, the men who had already traded their entire lives, their very being, the one thing they have that they will never get more of, their time on this earth. They had traded that in the exchange of a hope that they might live something less than a desperate old age. And the bankruptcy judge looked at Blankenship and looked at Wilbur Ross and said, "By gum, those old people are getting in the way of your ability to do business!" And with a stroke of a pen, threw the old people out in the road, too. There's no sense in naming names, but I do know for a fact that one man who was thrown into the road by Massey and by the International Coal Group, his wife was in the midst of chemotherapy for breast cancer. Too bad, lady! You're in the way of the new American business model, because business is ruthless, and we don't have time for sick women with lumps in their breast. We got money to make, sister! Do you understand how it works for Wilbur Ross? Yeah. So then ICG, the International Coal Group, with its chops wet and its fangs fairly dripping, with the lifeblood of the workers at Horizon Energy, well, it turned its steely gaze on an outfit called Anchor West Virginia Energy, Inc., and their little mines in places like Upshur County, West Virginia, and a little ne'er-do-well operation called Sago. And they gobbled it up because Anchor West Virginia Energy, Inc., just like Horizon Energy, was in, just like Bethlehem Steel, was in bankruptcy. For you see, Wilbur Ross Jr., he's a vulture, he's a jackal, he's a hyena. And he feeds on the putrefaction that resides in rotting flesh. And so again, having gobbled up Sago in March of 2005 and completed the transaction, the assimilation, if you will, resistance is futile. Having done so, Mr. Ross remarked to the newspaper, "We have an excellent safety record. We've won awards." Now, the Charleston Gazette, you have to remember, especially for those of you outside West Virginia, that's the main paper in the state. The Gazette puts its paper to bed, as far as I can tell, about 8 o'clock Eastern time every night. And when they went to press with Tuesday morning's Gazette, Ross had already said, and I pointed this out last night, it bears repeating, when they put the paper to bed Monday night for the Tuesday morning edition, Wilbur H. Ross Jr. had already said, quote, "We are doing everything we can to try to recover them as quickly as possible." Now, outside West Virginia, the people who were nearest to 9/11 will remember that in the first desperate hours of the first phase of the operation is called rescue, and it is for the living, and it is when there is hope for the living. It is only fair to note that Wilbur H. Ross Jr., being a resident of Manhattan, probably knows this very well. The next phase of the operation, once all hope of life has passed, is called recovery. You rescue the living, you recover the corpses. And before the paper went to bed on Monday afternoon, Wilbur H. Ross Jr., millionaire, billionaire, was already describing what was going on in Upshur County as a recovery. You do the math. You figure it out. And in the wee small hours of Wednesday morning, in the wee small hours of the morning, 3 hours after they were told that their loved ones were alive, 3 hours after Governor Manchin had said, "Miracles do happen," the families in the church at Sago found out it was all a lie. The company had known since about 20 minutes after the first announcement, and the next 2 hours and 40 minutes were spent in "holy hell, what do we do now" mode. And yet, as early as Monday, Wilbur H. Ross Jr., billionaire, was calling it a recovery effort. And by the way, did I mention to you that Wilbur H. Ross Jr. calls himself, wait for it, a Democrat? A man of the people. A man of the People's Party. Well, there is a new dawn a-comin' in America. And as part of that new dawn, I tell you what, and you're free to join me in this, the real Democrats, you, me, progressives, liberals, the people who are not afraid of the pro-death, pro-blood Republican Party, who will stand up in their face, who will stand up to bullies and be willing to enter into the fray and not cower in the corner like a Joe Lieberman and say, oh, please don't hit us again. We agree with you. Your war is a lovely thing. Now, please. No, those of us who will stand up to the punks and thugs, you know what? From here on out, we're going to decide who the Democrats are. Mr. Ross, Mr. Ross, I want you to hear this, Mr. Ross. Go change your registration, Mr. Ross. You're no damn Democrat. No Democrat does what you do, sir. No, sir. No, they don't. Now, meanwhile, late last night, as Anderson Cooper broadcast on CNN live, he was joined by another correspondent by the name of Randy Kaye, and they entered into a little discussion about exactly what the governor's office had done in all of this.
I just spoke with Tom Hunter, who is one of the governor's spokespeople, and I asked him, did your office ever confirm that 12 of these miners were alive? And they're somewhat backing off. They're saying that we never confirmed that 12 miners were alive. All we said was that they had located the miners. These are Tom Hunter's words. We had located the miners. We were assessing their medical condition, and we would report back soon. He is now saying that they never confirmed, and this is really important to say.
But the governor was in the church at the time, and according to other family members who were there, the governor stood up and was applauding
and
was euphoric and came out giving a thumbs up saying miracles do happen.
Yeah, miracles do happen. So no matter how hard the governor's office tries to spin it, the facts remain. Now, there are some questions. If I were Joe Manchin, I would be asking a bunch of questions about now. And one of the questions that deserves to be answered, and it's really a stupid question here in Bushmerica, is why were all the updates coming from the company and not from the Office of Mine Safety or the State Office of Mine Safety and Health? But then again, if you want to ask a question like that, you have to ask another question, too. You have to ask the question, why, in the moments after the blast first occurred, when the four men came running out of the mines, one of whom was almost blinded by the fireball, you have to ask the question, in those first moments, why was it that the International Coal Group called first the Office of Mine Safety and Health and MSHA? Why did those two? And I understand that you got to notify them. You absolutely do. But I don't think they're going to levy a humongous fine on your ass if you make the first call to 911. But they didn't. The first call went to MSHA. The second call went to the Office of Mine Safety and Health. The third call, baby, the third call went to 911. There's no difference. It's 2006. It might as well be 1906. And the last thought is the worker. The last thought is the miner. The first thought is the bottom line. Oh, yes, the first thought is always the bottom line. And, you know, I don't take my word for it. Listen to Bennett Hatfield. Listen to the CEO of International Coal Group. It's always about the business. This is from last night, early morning hours, after he struggled to explain why it was that, you know, things went the way he did. But as an afterthought, well, yeah, it's about the business.
And we'll, those that enjoy the business and enjoy the benefits of the income and the health care and all those things that coal miners enjoy, they enjoy this community. I think those people will continue to work in this business, and we hope they do.
Now, we missed about the first half of that. The question that had been put to him was, how can you go on and do this? How can, and, you know, frankly, my opinion, for what it's worth, that mine ought to be put down like you put down a rabid dog. dynamite charges ought to be set in the mouth of it, and the thing should be closed forever so that it won't make any more widows. Won't make any more orphans. Because, obviously, the International Coal Group cannot be trusted to live up to the letter and the spirit of the mine safety regulations. You see. So let's listen again to Bennett Hatfield.
We believe that our employees will return, and will those that enjoy the business and enjoy the benefits of the income and the health care and all those things that coal miners enjoy. They enjoy this community. I think those people will continue to work in this business, and we hope they do.
Of course they will, Bennett Hatfield. Of course they will. They're your slaves. They can't stand up to you. Nobody. And the conversations are already beginning to come out. Those workers talked about that Widowmaker mine. They told their loved ones, this place is a hellhole. This place has death in it. Well, why don't you tell somebody? Because they'll fire me. And then we go hungry, and you go hungry, and the children cry at night. So I have to go back into that hole. And I have no hope. Do you see how it works? And to hear Bennett Hatfield talk about the people who enjoy the business, the people who love coal mining, the people who like the benefits we paid. Well, you know, Bennett Hatfield, buddy, not getting killed, that's really the key to the benefits program, isn't it? But that's all right. You'll get up another morning, and you'll talk to your corporate counsel, and you'll call your lawyers in Charleston. And the accountants are already tallying up the cost of the recovery effort. And you see, that's going to go on your business expenses. The accountants are making sure you'll never feel that on what little bit of tax you pay in the first place. And we'll write off the lawyer fees defending the workers' comp claims against those, those widows and orphans, those people who are bad for business in West Virginia and America. We'll write that off, too. And you'll file an insurance claim on the collapse of the mine. Yes, you will. And the insurance company will pay you, and those proceeds won't be taxable. And the premiums you paid on the insurance won't be taxable. And you're gonna, Ben Hatfield, save the crocodile tears, brother, because you're gonna come out like bandits on this deal. And some other poor schmuck will agree to take your money and take your orders in exchange for good money. And in exchange for the possibility that you'll ignore a few more hundred safety violations, and in exchange for the risk that they too will wind up in a corner of a dark black hole in the earth, waiting for a rescue that will not come. Oh yes, Bennett Hatfield. The people who love the business will come back to it. Or maybe the people who love to feed their children will come back to it. But, you know, Bennett, we do understand that if they come back to you with a UMWA union membership card, that, baby, you're not interested in them. Because they've got a pension, and they've got benefits, and they've got real health care, and they have a real future for their families. You got to remember, International Coal Group brags about how low its benefit costs are. And that's what makes their stock go up. Remember that phrase that the right wing likes to use every time they start talking tax cuts about how a rising tide lifts all boats? The tide that's raising Bennett Hatfield's boat is O positive. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
My nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride. And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time. You'll be helping me take a fight on a crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
On December 8, 1997, our 7-year-old son, Evan, was murdered after signing up for basketball.
It was very devastating, just very devastating. And the victims program provided the resources for us to get the counseling that we needed.
Alec was also injured. They helped pay for Alec's cornea transplant.
They stood by us through the court process.
If you or someone you love have been a victim of violent crime, there is help available for you.
Crimevictims.gov.
Why should our children learn another language?
Everybody in the world doesn't speak English.
To succeed in this shrinking world, our children will need to communicate in more than one language.
So you could make new friends from different countries.
For our kids' sake, it's time to speak up for language education. Find out how at yearoflanguages.org.
That makes me confident.
Sponsored by the American Council on the Teaching of Foreign Languages.
Home. It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Thanks for sticking around. At least I hope you are sticking around. This is no pleasure. Days like this. Email in from our pal Benedict. Rant on, Bob. We in South Florida feel the pain also. When I heard of the carbon monoxide levels, I knew that they were all dead. It's not much to say to 12 families, but the miracle was that one got out alive. My prayers to all there. Thank you. And just by way of letting you know the reach of this slimy, sleazy, Devil May Care outfit, International Coal Group. The Coal Group, controlled by Wilbur Ross, a U.S. billionaire, listed on the New York Stock Exchange in November and 4 weeks ago, raised $231 million in an initial public offering to pay off most of its debt. Can you imagine that? Think about that. I get a little bit of grief sometimes when I talk about the people that I do not feel like are my fellow Americans. Guess what? $231 million were raised by the International Coal Group by people who were willing to bet other people's lives that they'll make a little money. Whew. Think about that. Think about that. Think about the conversations in the boardrooms and the brokerage offices. Well, you know, Steve, it looks like International Coal Group is going to be a real up-and-comer. You know, Ross created International Steel Group, and he was able to crush, absolutely crush, his opposition and sold it for 14 times what it was his initial investment. I think we need to go with Wilbur Ross Jr. He certainly has a fine financial head on his shoulders, doesn't he? Why, yes, Bill, I think we'd better do that. And if a few families of mine workers, well, if they have to grieve for a couple of years, so much, well, you know, they're just doing what an American should to help other Americans get a little bit richer. Pass me the caviar. That's what we're dealing with. That's who we're dealing with. I'm told that in the highfalutin business schools, Harvard and Stanford and Michigan and so forth, that they teach a course called business ethics. I don't know what they do in a business ethics class, you know, I frankly think they don't let anybody else really know until you're in the class, because I think they just sit around and do shots. Maybe shoot a little heroin or something. Business ethics? Business ethics? There are no business ethics. The ethics of business is what goes down on the bottom line of the ledger sheet at the end of the fiscal year. That is business ethics. Oh, by the way, it's not just American coal miners who are at risk from Wilbur H. Ross, Jr. No, 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 sunshine. Mr. Ross, who chairs ICG and has an about 13% stake in the company, is also one of the biggest shareholders in UK coal, Britain's largest coal producer. He has a reputation as a turnaround specialist and played a key role in creating ICG by pulling together a range of disparate, loss-making coal mining companies. Included in the ICG stable are former Horizon Natural Resources, Anchor Coal, and Coal Quest. Where will their next disaster come? Huh? Where will the next disaster come from? Oh, and Lord, can't you just wait for the hand-wringing by the legislators? And the one thing that would make a difference, making it easier for a man to become a union miner, well, that ain't gonna happen. That ain't gonna happen at all. Because that might mean that Don Blankenship and Wilbur H. Ross Jr. and Benedict Hatfield, that might mean that they made a little less money. Our friend Sue in Wales in the UK writes, I have just heard via Air America Radio of the true outcome of the mining accident in West Virginia. I would like to extend my deepest sympathy to the families and friends of the miners who died and my hopes for a full recovery of the young man who was miraculously brought out alive. I am astounded with the mainstream news report that they reported the exact opposite of the truth and hope there will be an investigation into how that came about. The pain and distress this false reporting has caused is unforgivable. In the have-it-all society of today, much of the populace failed to appreciate the debt they owe to brave people who spend their working lives digging in the bowels of the earth for the resource that provides them with the comfort they enjoy. With wishes for a better new year than the previous one, regards, Sue. Thank you, Sue. And of course, we only... coal was discovered in Boone County, what was then Virginia, in 1742, I believe, if I recall correctly. And since that day, well, it was the worst day, in the history of what would become this state. Coal has been blood and death and misery and hell for West Virginia. But I really shouldn't talk. When you hear from somebody like Sue, who comes from Wales, now, the Welsh, they know from coal misery. Coal was dug out of, well, was first dug out of Wales, God, what, in the age of, Henry the Fourth, Fifth, Sixth? One of the Henrys? And it has been followed by misery and death ever since. Tom Hartman has a book out called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and that is a reference to fossil fuels. Because coal is literally the compressed heat of the sun as it was gathered in by the ancient plant life millions upon millions of years ago. But then again, wait a minute, millions of years ago? No! The Earth's only 5,000 years old. God put that coal here. And if God put that coal here, that means God means for people to die digging it. That's why coal companies get to use phrases like, act of God. It's heartrending. Stop. Collect your thoughts, Bob. This press conference overnight from Bennett Hatfield. You got to understand when you talk about... We're West Virginians. We're used to being treated like draft animals. It's only in the last 60, 70 years that the United Mine Workers were able to compel coal companies to start treating workers like human beings. It hasn't been that long. And I don't mean to offend in any particular group of people, but when where you live is controlled, and what you eat is controlled, and when you eat is controlled, and where you may go and where you may stay is all controlled, and when an individual group can tell you that you may not meet with other human beings in a group, that's slavery. And long after the creation of the state of West Virginia, and long after the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, this has been and was, and to a certain extent still is, a slave state. You think I'm over the top? Ask the folks in Upshur County. Ask them if they were free. Ask them if those 12 men were free to walk away from that mine. Just ask. You'll get an answer that is probably in line with what I've just said. My God. My God in heaven. And it, there was a... like I said, in these comments from Bennett Hatfield, he says that West Virginians do that grief thing better than most others. And you know what? This is not a compliment.
Coal miners are a tough breed. They're survivors. They're proud, hardworking West Virginians, and they deal with hardship and deal with it better than, I think, than many other people do.
You get that? We're a tough breed. Coal miners are a tough breed. And I say we. You know, hell, I come from generation after generation after generation of coal miners, and so does my lovely wife. I'm the first one in the generational chain to break that, in the generations to break that chain. Do you hear that? Coal miners are good at grief. You say that about a draft animal, don't you? Let's go to the phones. Ben is with us. Hey, Ben. You're head on.
Hey, Bob. You're talking about draft animals. You know, remember when I was out there helping you get your studio set up?
Yeah.
And went to that wonderful little converted church bookstore cafe.
Yeah, the Cathedral Cafe.
Yeah, which is a great place if you're ever in West Virginia, look it up. But I bought a book there called King Coal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, coal mining used to be all done by muscle, whether it was human muscle, whether it was animal muscle. And in some of the deep mines, they would take draft animals down there, and the animals would live their whole lives.
Right.
They'd never see the surface. In fact, some of them were born there. And, you know, I've done some more reading since I got that book. And you know what? They actually spent more time figuring out how to keep those animals alive than the men, because the animals cost the company real money. The men they hired for 85 cents an hour.
It's the truth. I've got a friend, Ben, who says that a coal company fears a drop of rain more than they fear death, because a drop of rain might start rust on a piece of equipment, whereas a dead guy can always be replaced for free.
That's right. They're waiting in line there at the front gate to be hired.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's just our legacy, and it doesn't have to be coal. It's a shame that while you were here, the weather wasn't cooperative enough, but I would have liked to have shown you the Hawk's Nest Tunnel. That's a tunnel that was drilled through Gauley Mountain by Union Carbide Corporation, and the little town at the foot of the mountain. You passed through it on your way out. It's called Gauley Bridge.
Right.
It was known, Ben, as the town of the living dead. And this was, you know, this was the 1930s, because drilling through that mountain, through that sandstone, we learned the meaning and even gave rise to the name silicosis. And one after another, they stood at the gate to get hired as another man walked out to go and die with his lungs just turned into concrete.
Jesus.
It was the great, and just to put it in perspective, Ben, it was the greatest industrial disaster in the history of the world until Bhopal. Interestingly, another Union Carbide creation.
Well, you know, I think that one of these fine days we're going to wake up and hear a story that every single living soul, man, woman, cat, dog, child in Institute West Virginia was found dead because of something that Union Carbide messed up.
Yeah, well, if you look at what DuPont did in, this is still a developing story, what DuPont did in Wood County, West Virginia, the water supply all up and down the Ohio River is absolutely ruined because of a chemical called C8. And DuPont sat on the information, sat on the safety warnings, and just allowed people to poison themselves. Guess who one of DuPont's lawyers was through all of that?
Who?
a woman named Stephanie Timmermeyer, who is now the head of the Department of Environmental Protection for the state of West Virginia.
Delightful.
Ain't it? You know,
just delightful.
I mean, this.
I have other words, but I can't use them on the radio.
I know you'd make Agnes go for the button.
Yeah.
But I don't want people to think that I think West Virginia has some lease on industrial misery, but we have been the guinea pig, Ben. We have been the test case for just how far you can push a human being before they push back.
Uh-huh. And you know what? I think we've now reached that point, or at least I hope we've reached that point, because it's time for us to all start pushing.
Yeah, it is. And those people, can you imagine that the first thought of the state government of West Virginia was to post marksmen and people with guns and clubs to protect the coal mine from grief-stricken human beings? Can you imagine that was their first thought?
Well, you know, I find that to be, you know, a bit troubling because, you know, back in the day, the coal company had to buy its own thugs to do that.
Well, that's true, but if you follow West Virginia history enough, you will find out that after the great hue and cry about the coal thugs, people like the Baldwin-Felts Detective Agency and the Pinkerton men, after they were outlawed, the Baldwin-Thugs-Felts and the Pinkerton-Felts went and got themselves new jobs in something called, and it was brand spanking new and all shiny, and it was called the West Virginia State Police.
Yep.
Mine guards. You know, I don't know. This is a tough show to do tonight, Ben.
I know it.
And I don't want to froth at the mouth or foam, but these miners who died there deserve to be honored. And frankly, the way we honor them is to stop taking this crap from these corporate predators. This Ross guy, he's a predator, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're throwing him out of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
I don't care how he registers.
We're
throwing
him off the island right now.
Yeah. You are the biggest loser. I don't know what to do about these kind of people. And Bennett Hatfield, you heard that soundbite. Can you imagine telling people that, well, you know, West Virginians are good at grief?
You know, Randy Rhodes had a little soundbite that I wish I captured by itself earlier. And she said, you know, up until now, I've never had to take a position in the Hatfield-McCoy thing, but I think I'm on the McCoy side.
Yeah. Well, and the sad thing is that in that the Hatfields were a noble, noble clan.
Oh, yeah.
It goes up, if you're familiar with the mine wars at Matewan, the man who stood up to the company thugs was a man named Two-Gun Sid Hatfield.
Yep.
And the company murdered him on the steps of the McDowell County Courthouse. It goes on and on and on. Doctors, lawyers, and this guy is just some punk executive for a coal company?
Okay. No. Well, in my opinion, what happened here was not any act of God. It was manslaughter through depraved indifference. They knew, or should have known, but I know they knew because they were told that the mine was unsafe, that the mine was full of gas,
and the mine had had umpteen roof falls.
Yep.
You know, a roof fall can kill you as dead as any methane or carbon monoxide.
Well, and especially when you've got a mine that has you know, bad roof structure, you know, where no matter how many stay bolts you put in it, you're not going to keep that roof from coming down. If there's an explosion in there, you get what you got, which is the whole thing comes down.
And this, you know, but you know, they don't care. They don't care. They've shown by their safety record that they don't care. They had 46 violations in the course of an 11-week, and some of them, there's a special term, and I forget what it is within the industry, there's a special term for violations that are so willful, you know, willful and depraved that it almost makes the idea of mining safely impossible. And they had these.
And what's more, the inspection that levied a lot of these things ended the 22nd of December. They shut down.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
From the time they were levied those citations, that mine had not had a human being in it until this week.
Right.
Until the day they walked in there and it all blew up. So there was absolutely, they knew because they had weeks now to sit on the fact that the federal mine safety people found all these violations in that mine, to mull over the fact they had the violations, they knew this at the upper levels of their company by now, and they still opened that mine.
And yet, and here's the really fun part. This is the part that makes the mine executives just giggle, Ben. And I was reminded of it when I was watching CNN this afternoon. That prattling woman, Kira Phillips, keeps asking the correspondent in the field, "Well, have you talked to anybody in the church? Are they talking about suing the company? Are they going to sue anybody?" And I finally got fed up and sent an email. But the fact of the matter is, that dumb woman didn't understand that that ICG is the beneficiary of the very first original tort reform. Those families can't sue the company.
No, they can't.
Because the company is immune from lawsuit under workers' compensation, which we have just gone on to make harder for those families to collect.
But you know what we can do if a prosecutor can be found to be interested in this?
What's that?
We can go after them for manslaughter through depraved indifference.
Well, that would be beautiful.
And that's what needs to happen here. Whether it's going to happen or not, they need to be charged with those homicides.
They should be. They should go to prison for this.
This is just like sending a man, up in an airplane when you know the landing gear won't work. Okay? If you did that, if you sent a pilot up in an airplane you knew was going to fall apart, or there was a reasonable chance he was going to be killed in it, and unless he was some test pilot, you would have committed a criminal act.
Yeah.
Okay, well, likewise, they knew they were sending these men to their probable deaths, and they sent them down there anyway.
Well, and again, I think it was a conversation I had last night, Ben. If it's some ordinary Joe on the street and you catch him with some stolen property, you apply to him a standard that he knew or should have known that the property was stolen. These people knew or should have known that that mine was a widowmaker. Now, is there someone out there who would be willing to charge that? I'm guessing the prosecuting attorney in Upshur County owes his soul to the company store.
I'm sure he does, but I'm wondering if enough people were to ask him for an indictment, whether he wouldn't feel politically pressured to do so.
I don't know. I'd like to share in your optimism, but I can't. I'm sorry.
I know, sir.
All right, Ben, thanks so much, and thank you for your thoughts. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And let's roll on to Wayne. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, I'm going to share in Ben's enthusiasm. Listen, Mother Jones put it best, pal. Mourn the dead and fight like hell for the living.
Right.
I've mourned enough. I'm pissed off.
Yeah.
And it's time to fight like hell for the living.
Where does that fight begin, Wayne?
Huh?
Where does that fight begin?
As far as, I began it a long time ago. I need some people behind me.
Yeah.
It starts right now. And listen, Bob. I'm not Democrat, Republican. I ain't talking parties here.
No, I'm not.
I'm talking about Americans, and I'm talking about standing up for working people.
Yeah.
And, what we have let these corporations and people and get away with is
murder.
It's criminal on our part. We have to take some of the blame for allowing them to reach the latitude of corruption that they have reached.
Yeah.
And it's time to stand up and do something about it. And what happened, I can understand a mistake. I can understand a miscommunication. What I can't understand is letting me agonize for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, not agonize, but celebrate.
Well, and see,
so I can agonize more.
Well, see, they tried to ask that Hatfield why he did that. They said, "Why didn't you tell him to stop? Stop with the celebrations." And he said, "Which one do you want me to tell to stop celebrating? Because all I knew is that there were 12 bodies."
I want you to tell him that got the daggone truth.
Yeah,
that's what I want you to tell him.
Yeah,
I know it's a hard thing, but people can accept it. People can accept the truth. People can accept mistakes. What people can't accept is deception for 3 damn hours.
Right.
Now what the hell is... So what did...
But again, Wayne, it took those 3 hours to get the SWAT teams in place.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not trying to overplay this.
I'm not trying to overplay anything.
But it takes a little while to get your logistical support in so that you can slap those suffering people down in case they decide to rise up against the company.
That's exactly right.
And you know what, Wayne? They were ready to kill in defense of that coal mine.
Yes, they were. That's exactly right, Bob. But, you know, that is what has gripped and overpowered everything. I mean, our whole political system.
I mean,
you know, you could take this situation all and tie it. Well, I don't know. I guess there's reports that Abramoff was involved somewhere. But I'm not. It's not the name. It's not the person. It's the attitude.
I know.
Fascism.
Yeah, it is.
That's what it is. I guess that's the word I'm looking for.
When the government is more concerned with corporate well-being and corporate property than they are with individual citizens of this state and this country.
What do they call that?
You know and I know.
Well,
when you've got to wait for 2 hours from the moment that you find out that that you've just told a honking lie, but it takes 2 hours to get the shock troops in line.
Right, you know, and that's what I'm telling you. I mean, about the attitude. You know, this is, look what they did about Pat Tillman. I mean, it carries right on down there.
Yeah,
you know,
sure it is.
The whole corporate structure.
Yeah, this thing doesn't stand alone, Wayne.
No, it doesn't. It's what they have.
This isn't the disease. This is the symptom of it.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, you say you need some people to stand up behind you. God, you're absolutely right.
We need people, you know, not to stand behind me, stand beside me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what we, I mean, you know, it's time for
and,
the people.
But you know, I mean, you're no egomaniac. This isn't just you. When you say you mean, you know.
I mean working people.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. And I don't care if you're union or non-union.
Right.
I mean working people. You know, I do believe if these people had a voice, I do believe if the United Mine Workers were strong enough to take this mine and do that, you know, that there is a, nobody could say for 100% that this wouldn't happen, that I bet there's a whole bunch of percentages in the favor that it wouldn't have.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, if people had a right to, well, the fire boss went in there and came back and said it was okay. Well, guess what? If the fire boss came back and said it wasn't okay, he'd be looking for a damn job tomorrow.
Well, that's right, and
standing behind.
It has taken 3 days, Wayne, but somewhere around 5:30, they finally managed to get a representative, the United Mine Workers, on CNN.
And what did they have to say?
Well, among other things, or maybe this was in the newspaper article in the Beckley paper today. The mine workers offered to come and help with a safety assessment, and they would not allow them on the property. However, they did manage to, you know, the rescue teams, United Mine Workers in them. But the United Mine Workers...
Well, I'm going to call you now. Well, I know something. I'm going to document that. I want that noted because that story was never told.
No.
Because I'm standing here saying to myself, why in the hell didn't the United Mine Workers send some teams up there?
Well, they were in the rescue teams.
Yeah, nah, okay.
That was documented on CNN this afternoon. And, you know, the gentleman from the mine workers, I admired his restraint because he had far more than I do. And he said, look, he said, right now I am not concerned with whether these workers were union or non-union. They are coal miners and they are my brothers.
Very good. Where was this, Bob?
This was on, Wolf Blitzer interviewed him on CNN this afternoon. I believe his last name was Kane.
That's probably when I had to be at work.
It gets in the way of things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. Son of a gun. Well, that's outstanding. That's outstanding, and that's what has to happen.
But now what they have to do, and you know, you talk about Mother Jones. You know where Mother Jones was when she was saying the stuff like what you quoted?
Right here in West Virginia.
She was in the New River coal field. She was at Thurmond.
That's exactly right. And somebody told me she cursed once or twice, too.
Yes, she did.
Yes. Little bitty woman, too.
Yeah.
Them little
and
bitty
she said,
mean, no man.
She said, when I die and I get to heaven, I will tell God Almighty about the people of West Virginia. Because from the way they suffer, it's obvious that no one ever has.
All right. Listen, I'm thinking about, well, Mother Jones, people like that. I hope Brother Ed's listening. I don't know if he's listening or not. I'm thinking, here's what we're doing. We got to go around to all the trades and, you know, the United Mine Workers, the building trades, the textile workers, and get a bunch of the old guys, the old organizers.
Yeah.
And we're going to start a new crew called the Old Guys that Ain't Afraid to Die Organizers.
You know what? That could be the best thing that ever happened to organized labor.
Exactly, because, you know, I mean, you know, we all know hell it could have name in it anyway, so who cares?
And 100 years ago, you know, like I said, nothing's changed. 100 years ago, Wayne, taking that job as an organizer, that was a job you took if you weren't too much concerned with continuing to live.
That was putting a target on your back, brother.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it was.
But look where they got. Look what they did.
Yeah.
You know, and people have to realize that, too. It is, as bad as this situation was, you know, those people went back in there because they were, I don't know how much money they made, but if it wasn't for the United Mine Workers.
And they wouldn't be making that money.
They wouldn't be making a third of what they were
making. Well, what was reported, Wayne, was that, an ordinary miner. Working at that Sago facility could make $50,000 a year. A foreman could make $150,000.
Right. And his incentive was get people to work in unsafe places.
Right.
Right. Now, that's exactly what it is.
You know, and there was talk about how one of the mine superintendent up there lost his uncle in the blast.
Yeah. You know, people... I think that, you know, like this delusion, people, they're saying, well, he loved it. Oh, he absolutely loved it. Oh, he, blah, blah. You know what working men love? They love their family.
Yeah.
And if this is the way they can support and feed and take care of their family to the best of their ability, then they tell themselves they love it because they're taking care of their family.
Yeah. Because what they do for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day gets them a smile in hour 13.
That's exactly right. And then these people know that they could put these people in dangerous situations because of the love of their family.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? I don't know if I'm...
Yeah, it makes perfect sense, Wayne. And the thing is...
And they take advantage of that.
Sure they do.
That's the crime.
And
not that you know it, but you take advantage of it.
Yeah, and we can't make enough out of the... we cannot reiterate enough, we cannot emphasize enough that these families, these aggrieved families, are not permitted. The law of this state and many other states says that these families are not permitted to air their grievances against the company in court because the company is the beneficiary of the very first tort reform.
Workers' compensation.
Yeah.
Which we just changed.
Which we just made a hell of a lot harder.
We were talking about that earlier. Did you hear, too, that they all of a sudden they discovered that, wow, you know, if we figure it this way, that unfunded liability isn't anywhere near what we thought it was.
Oh, I know.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, and the first thing they did
isn't
as a result.
That amazing.
Yeah, miracle math made easy.
I'll tell you, yeah.
And then and what happens? The coal company gets a big rate reduction.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, you know, Bob, they keep the lights on.
In the funeral home.
I'll tell you where I'd like to put that light, brother.
Yeah.
But I'd probably get thrown off the air.
Nah, Agnes would just use the button. It's a hell of a button, Wayne.
It is, though.
I appreciate your thoughts. And, you know, there's a little bit of realism here. I wish that people, you know, in the memory of these 12, 13, my God, what kind of life does this young man, what is he, 22 years old, Randall McCloy Jr., what kind of a life does he have coming?
I think 27, I heard.
Yeah.
I know, man,
and you know the poor guy's going to recuperate, and he's going to have company men and company lawyers on top of him, like dogs on a bone wagon.
Comp.
Yeah,
from the prime. Yeah, go back to work, man. You're just a big sissy. So what? You saw?
Yeah,
you know, 11 of your brothers die.
Yeah, get back to work.
Right, exactly.
And the lawyers are going to be on top of him, and they're going to ask him questions that are designed to make sure that he, the sole survivor of this horror, that he can provide them, the company, cover.
Oh, exactly. Oh, wow, man, I bet they're right in there already. I never thought of that.
The lawyers in the law firms, Wayne, are already writing out the questions.
Okay. Oh, God. Well, Bob, all I can tell you, man, is it's time to fight like hell for the living.
Yeah.
All right, brother.
Grieve for the dead, fight like hell for the living. Thanks, Wayne. Yeah. Take care.
Have a good one, man.
All right. Bye. Will do. Yeah, don't make any mistake. All these, you know, if you see a couple of tears rolling down the face of Bennett Hatfield, understand he has a $100 hanky to wipe it away with. When you're in the coal business, you're in the monster business. And I'm sorry, that's just how it is. You know, but Wayne's idea about getting the old guys and forming a new organizing squad, that's brilliant. The old guys who remember what the fight was like. To go back into the fray and explain to the young that, yeah, look at you. Maybe you get, maybe you're not a miner. That's not the only place industrial disasters happen. There's a case, a legal case in West Virginia called Mandalidis. And that established a principle that, we have been joined by our cat. That established a principle that if the boss tells you to do something and you know that it is going to, cost you your life, your appendages, whatever, to do it, that you have the right to say no, and that if they do something to you, or if you go ahead and do it anyway and get hurt, that then the workers' compensation immunity goes away. Guess what? The legislature fixed that one, too. So if you're watching CNN or Fox or MSNBC or any of the other networks, and you hear some bobblehead say, "Do you expect the families to sue the coal company?" You can at least be quietly comforted in the knowledge that the coal company may be hearing that question, and every time they do, they clink their little champagne glasses together and they giggle. Because they can't be sued. They cannot be sued. Isn't that just beautiful? Don't you love it when the government of the people, by the people, and for the people is transformed into the government for the corporation, by the corporation, and of the corporation? Doesn't it just warm the cockles of your heart? It makes me want to vomit. But that's me. And I'm a lefty radical. Right. I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is Head On, and we're a little late, but it's time for our Cup of Joe report. We'll be back.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Your mama's gone away and your dad's gonna stay. Don't leave nobody but the babe. Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the babe.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. Republicans have done a good job over the years in making the term liberal such a dirty word that people are afraid to admit to being one. But they've also quite unintentionally done a lot of damage to the term conservative in the sense that no one seems to be really sure exactly what a conservative is these days. Strictly speaking, a conservative is someone who prefers the past to the present or the future and tends to fight against political and social changes. But that can hardly be used to describe the current Republican Party unless the past they're talking about is the past of, oh, say, Europe of the 17th century. As Atrios points out, in his defense of illegally spying on Americans, President Bush has insisted that he has the right to circumvent the law in emergency situations, though such a situation doesn't exist. Yes, it's true. Mr. Bush hasn't sent the FBI into Atrio's house and placed him under arrest, or Marcos, or Digby, or even me. But if we're to take Mr. Bush at his word, if he felt they were a threat to national security, he has the right to do so. In other words, he thinks he's a dictator whether he uses that authority or not. Exactly what a conservative is these days. Strictly speaking, a conservative is someone who prefers the past to the present or the future and tends to fight against political and social changes. But that can hardly be used to describe the current Republican Party unless the past they're talking about is the past of, oh, say, Europe of the 17th century. As Atrios points out, in his defense of illegally spying on Americans, President Bush has insisted that he has the right to circumvent the law in emergency situations, though such a situation doesn't exist. Yes, it's true, Mr. Bush hasn't sent the FBI into Atrio's house and placed him under arrest, or Marcos, or Digby, or even me. But if we're to take Mr. Bush at his word, if he felt they were a threat to national security, he has the right to do so. In other words, he thinks he's a dictator whether he uses that authority or not. Is that what they mean by conservatism? I don't care how big an insult it's become. I'm proud to consider myself a liberal because I understand what being a liberal really means. But when someone these days tells me they're a conservative, I have to ask them what they mean by that. Because frankly, I don't know anymore. Now, get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show, available via streaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the starry crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, sisters, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sisters, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray, studying about that good old way, and who shall wear the robe and crown, good Lord, show me the way. Oh, brothers, let's go down, come on down. Come on, brothers, let's go down, down in the river to pray. As I went down in the river to pray,
Welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. I don't quite have enough ego to say that this is a memorial to the fallen miners. What goes on in your heart is your business. Here we remember them. And here, we know that 100 years have passed and nothing has changed. Here we read the words of that vile, hateful, filthy woman, Elaine Chao, who is George Bush's Secretary of Labor. Now bear in mind, putting an industry sleaze in charge of the Department of Labor, which is what Republicans are wont to do, I'm sorry, some of this has to be politicized, because it's political. Putting an industry sleazebag like Elaine Chao in charge of the Department of Labor is like putting a weasel in charge of the hen house. You do understand that. Of course you do. You're decent, you're upright, you're liberal, you're progressive, you're democratic. Labor Secretary Elaine L. Chao, this in the Associated Press, said the Mine Safety and Health Administration was beginning an investigation to, quote, determine the cause of this tragedy and will take the necessary steps to ensure that this never happens again. Shut up, you witch. Never happens again, my left hind foot. It will happen, it has happened, and will continue to happen again and again and again and again, so long as this government cares more about the corporations than it does the people that work for them. It'll happen again, Elaine, baby. And you'll put out, or some successor to you will put out another press release. We must ensure that this never happens again, and it'll happen again. And another press release will come out. We must ensure that this will never happen again, and it'll happen again. Of course it will. Ted Kennedy has gone begging to ask Republican Senator Mike Enzi of where? Wyoming? To please start hearings on why this happened. Be no hearings, sunshine. Not for a long time. Not until the corporate company line can be established. Not until they can make sure that it's enough of a whitewash job that International Coal Group comes out of it smelling like a rose. You know why that'll happen? Because that's what International Coal Group wants to happen, and International Coal Group has a hell of a lot more influence than in Washington, D.C., than some dirt-scrabbling miner. 100 years are gone, generations of men and women in the dirt, and nothing has changed. A union rose up and effected change. And then Republicans beat it down. The Reagan administration hated a working man, and working men and women went out and voted for him. The Bush administration despises working people, and working people said, well, at least he doesn't want the queers to get married. I better vote for George. God, I saw it happen all over West Virginia in 2004. People willing to have their pockets picked and be robbed just so long as the political candidate of their choice remains sufficiently bigoted to appeal to their prejudices. Gay marriage is not the problem that America faces. America faces a crisis in which the government does not care what happens to the people who work and make that government go. Dear leader said today, we send our prayers and heartfelt condolences to the loved ones whose hearts are broken. We ask that the good Lord comfort them in their time of need. Good Lord better comfort him, George, because you damn sure aren't. You gonna come to West Virginia, George? You gonna tell him how you gonna tell us how you fell in a hole once, but you got out just like you told those soldiers that you were in combat with a cedar tree? You gonna do that, George? I pray to God you don't. The ground in Upshur County is soaked in blood now, George. Stay away from it. It's hallowed ground, and cowards like you need not set foot upon it. We pray that the good Lord be with them in their time of need. And meanwhile, your corporate cronies are working on documents that are going to call the explosion an act of that same good Lord that you have invoked. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord God. But you want to bet? Anybody taking bets? When's he going to be here? When's he going to fly in? When is he going to dishonor the memory of those fallen miners to come in and talk about their hard work? You know, George loves to talk about hard work. George Miller is the number one Democrat on the Education and Workforce Committee. He's asking for hearings, too. The that committee chair is Representative John Boehner, Republican of Ohio. George Miller wants hearings. Congressman Boehner, he'll make a call to International Coal Group and see if it's okay to hold hearings or to hold off. Now, I know the little wing nuts that lurk around and listen to this program are going, that's not how it is, but yes, it is, and you know it is. You know that your Republican representatives don't give a tinker's damn about you. This is something that only the people can solve. Only the people. Government can't solve this. All the hearings in the world, chaired by all the political hacks in the world, will not change this. The laws are in place. The regulations are in place. The safety rules are very clear, and they piled up and 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 piled up at Sago number one, and they didn't care. And they sent those men into that hole, and they died. Because International Coal Group didn't care. And International Coal Group, well, bear in mind, they are grieving today. One of the most sickening, callous statements I've ever heard came from this Ben Hatfield. This is it.
It's beyond belief. Welcome to the worst day of my life. It's tough.
It's tough. You want to know why it's tough? International Coal Group shares dropped 30 cents to $9.06 a share today. Welcome to the worst day of my life. It's tough. Yeah, it's tough when you dump 30 cents a share. I tell you what, let's take our top of the hour break and one more hour. Look, if you want in on this, come on along. This is, feel free. Vent. Support. Grieve. It's okay. If you're angry, share it. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
And they all did agree that the man who ran looked a lot like me.
Well, the judge said, son, what's your alibi?
You put your keys between your knuckles. You walk in well-lit areas. Stay clear of parked vans. Someone approaches you, and you cross to the other side of the street. Your cell phone is ready. The numbers for help saved on speed dial. You lock the door behind you. Once, twice, maybe three times. Now you feel safe, secure. You think you've made the right choices to protect yourself. Think again. Because if you're not making healthy choices, you could be one of the nearly 2 out of 3 women killed by cancer, diabetes, heart disease, or stroke. So eat right, get active, don't smoke, see your doctor, and live. Learn to protect yourself from yourself at 1-866-399-6789 or visit us at everydaychoices.org. A message from the American Cancer Society, American Diabetes Association, American Heart Association, and the Ad Council.
Hey, have you got a minute?
Huh?
I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha. Uh-huh.
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Miners and mine operators understand the dangers inherent in working at a mine site. They also know how to avoid those hazards, but will they do it? Hello, I'm Bob Friend with the Mine Safety and Health Administration. Many recent fatalities in the mining industry have resulted from bad safety decisions. For example, one victim fell from an elevated platform because he was not wearing a safety line. Tragedies like this don't have to happen if everyone in the mining workplace thinks about the job and makes the right decision. Safety begins with you. If you're about to perform electrical work, lock out and tag out before you start the work. Make the right decision. If you're a truck driver, you can choose whether to wear the seat belt. Make the right decision. MSHA's message to you is make the right decision in the mining workplace. Decide to be safe. Thank you for listening.
To a city fair.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
We are back for the final hour. This is Head On. I'm Bob. You know that. You know the phone number. You just heard Brian Reznor give it out. The other one, of course, is 304-658-3333. You got 50 minutes or so if there's something you want to get said. For God's sakes, don't keep it inside. It'll hurt you. The email is bob@headonradio.com. You can use that, too. Let's do a quick email, speaking of which, and then we'll go straight to the phones. Our good friend Judy writes in and says, Sago's sorry owner. Yeah. Sago's sorry owner just came on CNN and gave an interview. Says he is sorry and has set up a fund and set $2 million in it and is asking, here's the fun part, for the public to put money in it. How very coal baron like them to have the taxpayers continue to pay for the greedy mistakes of the coal industry. I would only contribute to that fund to get a lawyer to sue the federal, state, and all the coal companies. You go, Judy. And I agree with her. The nerve of that. Okay, good. Good. $2 million? That's chump change, Wilbur Ross Jr. That's chump change. What's the story from the New Testament where the rich man comes to Jesus and says, you know, I really like your message, buddy. I'd like to follow you. What do I got to do? You know, I mean, what's the initiation ceremony like? I mean, do I got to ride a goat? And Jesus looks at him and says, no, brother, it's easy. Give away everything you have and follow me. And he goes, no, I can't do that. No, I can't do that at all. 2 million, chump change. And don't ask the American people, you know, because we're charitable. We will give till it hurts. And there probably are people who will contribute to that fund, but it is not the American people's problem, what they did at Katrina number one. It is not the American people's problem. It is Wilbur Ross's problem. It is Benedict Hatfield's problem. Oh, God Almighty. It is that mine superintendent's problem. It is the problem of every man who said, never mind the violations, get in there, boy, we got money to make. So I agree with Judy. Let's go to the phones. Fritz has been waiting, and I appreciate it. Hey, Fritz, you're Head On.
Hi, Bob. Deepest condolences from New Mexico.
Thank you.
Really, really awful. And, you know, anybody that doesn't believe, I challenge anybody out there among your listeners who voted for Bush who doesn't believe that this is about greed, corporate cronyism, and the appointment of incompetent SOBs to high posts in the government, like Elaine Chao, in your most recent rant, which was right on. You know, I challenge any of them to call you up and say that this is not about greed and corporate cronyism and destruction of unions and destruction of workers. Call you up and discuss it with you, and I'll buy them a copy of Jimmy Carter's book, Our Endangered Values. I will personally buy it for them if they have the guts to call you up and say that to you, to your face.
Jimmy Carter
identifies rigidity, domination, and exclusion as the three characteristics of religious fundamentalists in
mm-hmm.
his book.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, that's exactly what we're dealing with here. These people are rigid. They see no other view other than their own. They want to dominate the worker. They want to dominate the common man, and they want to exclude. Just what you talked about, you know, the gays won't get married, and this is how we get them to vote for us. You know, I'm just so sick of these people. It makes my body fluids boil.
It makes you physically ache, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I am so ill about this. This is, you know, it's just Katrina again. And
yeah.
It's going to be again and again and again as long as these SOBs remain in power.
Yeah, let's not kid ourselves, Fritz. I mean, this is an isolated pocket of high tragedy. The tragedy in Katrina was arguably greater by virtue of scope. There are, what, 6,000 people still unaccounted for because we don't care enough. The government, the Bush administration, we care, they don't, doesn't care enough to hunt for them.
Right. Scope, yes, but underlying philosophy, same thing.
Yeah. Same death, different day.
Yep. Same deal. Again, you know, I think you have my email. I challenge anybody who voted for Bush. I will buy you a copy of Jimmy Carter's book. It is $25. I'll put out $25 to get you to read what this man is saying, because he's got it right.
Well, you know, that's that is a charitable and a decent and compelling offer, Fritz. We got one problem.
Yeah.
There may be some books in that some words in that book of greater than two syllables.
Yeah. That is a problem, isn't it?
I mean, this is, you know, the Republicans, they're soundbite people. They're not
exactly.
You know, they're not thinkers. They're not and you know that argument has been put forward that's why it's hard for liberal talk radio to get a toehold, because we are thinkers on this side.
Oh, it is very difficult. Absolutely. Did you hear Limbaugh's? Did you hear the Limbaugh soundbite that's going around? That's the last thing I wanted.
Oh my God! No, tell me.
Well, he's basically characterizing the whole idea of a worker as socialist. You know, why are we talking about workers? This is the modern world. We've gone past that. We now have companies and associates. In other words, the Walmart model, the upper class and the lower class.
So we're not even allowed to call ourselves workers anymore.
No, we're associates, Bob. It was so implicit in what he said that we now have, we should have a two-class society. You know? I'm sitting here, you know, struggling to stay in the middle class, you know, sitting in the middle class on one end, feeling alone.
Yeah.
Like, am I really middle class? Do we have a middle class anymore? It's ridiculous.
We still have the values, and we still have the desires, and we still have the needs. Do we have the means to be a middle class person? No. And if you want, you know, these guys working in these mines, if they're the miners, they're making 50 grand a year, good for them. But why, you know, why is it that the only way the person can make 50,000 bucks is to run the risk of death and dismemberment and misery?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and the choice is, of course, to make $7 an hour working at Walmart.
Yeah.
You know.
And be an associate.
Exactly.
And, you know, and associates don't have pensions either, Fritz. Let's remember that.
Associates don't have health care. They don't have anything, you know. But that's the Limbaugh model. You know, it's passé to be a worker, which is obviously why it's passé for there to be a Department of Labor that supports the rights of workers. Elaine Chao. Oh, God, that woman. Give me a break.
Oh, you know, I mean, can you imagine dinner at the McConnell home?
You know,
she's married to Mitch McConnell,
You're
that
right,
filthy senator from Kentucky. Can you imagine the dinner table conversation? Dear, how many workers did you screw today?
God, unfortunately, it's probably close, Bob. Unfortunately.
It's not hard. You know, it's not hard to imagine evil. And, you know, you can get it's a tough trip, but you can get inside the mindset and the skull of these hateful killers, and you can crawl around for a little bit, and you can come out and feel like you need to be deloused. But they're simple people, Fritz. They're very simple people.
Yeah, they're simply evil, Bob.
Yeah.
That's what they are. They really are. These are evil people. You know, you have to reach that conclusion, and I hate to say that. I want to be charitable.
I know.
I can't find it in me right now.
No. Well, I mean, if you were to find it in you, you would find yourself being delusional.
Yeah.
It is delusional to believe that these people give any kind of concern for people who go to work every day.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm going to end with this, Bob.
I
forgive them, because down deep there's the Son of God in each of them. So I know that it's there, but the ego that enshrouds that Son of God is black-hearted and despicable. That's it.
I think you're right.
And I really leave you on that note, and I pray for everybody there that you'll all get through this.
Thank you, Fritz.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's see. Let's go to Jim on line two. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
What a thoroughly decent human being your last caller is.
Yes, he is.
You know, why does any of this surprise you? I mean,
we examined
the history of the two continents here, the North American and the South American continent. What's happened ever since we landed on these shores to the peoples who lived here?
Death, destruction, misery.
I mean, you know, in South America it happened first, and you had it was so horrible that there was a Catholic bishop named Bartolome de las Casas who wrote of the numbers of Indians that were just massacred by, you know, in the millions.
Yeah, slaughtered wholesale.
And, of course, the church wanted to restrain that because they didn't want our their friends like Pizarro and Cortez to get a bad name. And
well, they had to be reined in Mexico, and that was accomplished by Bishop Zumarraga?
I think so.
Yeah.
And then, of course, of the settlement of the North American continent, I mean, It was just the history of one broken treaty after the other with the red man or the Native American.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm trying to say is this country has just been founded and written in the blood and slaughter of and the massacre of the innocents.
Yeah. I mean, so you're right. You know, there's no surprise in me over this, Jim.
When you compare that, this incident of yesterday, to what has gone on before, it's almost insignificant compared to what has happened before. Not that I'm trying to demean it, I'm not.
This is a small mine disaster by comparison with, Farmington in 1968. That was 70-some-odd miners.
Well, you had one back in the earlier 20th century. It was 300 people?
1907, Monongah, 362 people. The list is almost endless. Between 1900 and 1969, something on the order of 15,000 or more miners were killed in this state?
Well, you know, the whole thing has really been, in our case, ever since the advent of Ronald Reagan, an increasing tendency to be anti-labor and to be anti-worker, okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and the first area of the workforce they started on was the federal worker. And Reagan started that when he messed up the federal retirement system and began to try to degrade the assets of the federal government through the Grace Commission. You know, he wanted
and busted Patco.
Yeah, and when he wanted to eliminate 600,000 jobs, and he has been like the idol of these Republicans, so they wanted to basically carry forth his vision.
Well, you know,
part of what this whole thing is about.
Ronald Reagan was so hateful, it amazes me that the earth itself hasn't vomited him up out of the grave. I don't mean to be too graphic with that.
Well, I understand
but,
what you're saying.
But, you know, this is a statistic that is frequently forgotten, Jim. The last time in America that the majority of middle-class working households were supported by a single wage earner was at the end of the Carter administration.
That's right. Ronald Reagan said, if you're not making over 100 grand a year, you're broke.
Yeah.
And he's right. I mean, as far as Fritz, dear Fritz, there is no such thing as the middle class. You aren't in middle class anymore, I hate to tell you. Welcome to 714 Delaware Street with Roseanne and Dan.
Yeah.
And as far as this thing with Reagan, you know, for example, on the day that Kennedy was shot, all the people in Hollywood canceled their cocktail parties.
Mm-hmm.
The weekend, of course, Friday.
Right.
Except one couple. Guess who they were?
Oh, it had to be Ron and Nancy.
And when people came to the door, and inside were John Wayne and I think some other people that these people just go crazy about, they were in there laughing about, you know, he got what he deserved. And Nancy opened the door, and she said the first words were, not one word about you know what. Referring to his assassination that afternoon.
God Almighty.
Yeah, you ought to read Kitty Kelly's book about her.
No, but...
it's a read. It's a good read.
No, I don't doubt it. And you know the interesting thing? That woman never gets sued.
Well, because Ms.
Truth
Kelly
is an absolute defense.
Has her facts straight. I mean, you take a look at some of the jackets of her books and you see her files. I mean, the only person who had files more extensive than she is J. Edgar Hoover.
Just about, yeah.
And basically, this thing that happened, and I was talking with Wayne last night about this. I don't understand in these mines, for example, why could they not have had stations where they have bottles of compressed air and food and water?
Because that costs money, Jim.
Well, I mean, this is something that Mencia or whatever it is that I'm used to dealing with OSHA.
Yeah, MSHA, sure.
MSHA. I mean, this is something that, you know, why can't they have something like this for the protection of these people? This is something that's going to have to be addressed. And they could have, you know, survival stations where these people could escape to until they could be reached, and our global positioning thing on at least one of them's belt, so they wouldn't have to go drilling willy-nilly all around to try to find them, these people where they are.
But, you know, some of this is impacted by the underground nature of the thing. You know, cell phones don't work down there. It just doesn't.
Well, they have certain, well, Bob, they do have electronic devices that can penetrate ground.
Oh, ground-penetrating radar, absolutely.
And they can use something like that. But these people.
But again, remember, worker safety is not the first concern of the coal operator.
Well, the thing is,
coal is the first concern of the coal operator, Jim.
These people are trying to destroy any efforts that were made during the Progressive Era,
Yes. Yeah, they absolutely are.
It's really odd. And the way he started that was Theodore Roosevelt, a Republican president. He was the one who was largely instrumental in the Progressive Era because he saw the evil of a country that was of the monopolist, by the monopolist, and for the monopolist, and began the trust busting.
And, well, he knew that the country could never grow to its full fruition if that model continued to be followed.
And when you really disenfranchise workers and you call them associates, what you're doing is you're just having basically a type of Jim Crow law system, sharecroppers that are there who have no benefits, they have no pension, they have no real position other than they're associated with a company. They're not an employee. And, a man's work is a very important part of his whole being. You know what I'm saying?
It's a part of his dignity.
I mean, Karl Marx defined work quite well. And I've forgotten what his definition of it is, but it's a product of his mental and physical capacity. And I'm paraphrasing there.
Well, we all get an indeterminate amount of time upon this planet, Jim. And depending on one's religious outlook, either there's another life coming around or, reincarnation,
right,
or you go off to pie in the sky or when you die or whatever. But we all get an indeterminate amount of time upon this planet. And work and doing what one loves to do and what one does well is what gives definition to that time.
Well, yeah, certainly. And it would appear to me as though that is not being factored into the equation of the people who are in charge now.
It's not being factored into the equation in American life. How many jobs are there out there that people get up and go to every day with their head slung low, just dreading another day of it?
Well, basically, what the jobs that have been created under this current administration are what I call meat jobs.
Yeah.
And they're just basically low-paying.
Well, didn't we learn something?
Mind-numbing sense of being on a treadmill.
Automatons. Didn't we learn something back when the Labor Department tried to reclassify working at McDonald's as an industrial job?
I didn't know they tried to do that.
That's
incredible.
Oh, yeah, sure they did.
An industrial job making hamburgers.
Hamburger technician.
I see.
Hamburger associate.
Well, they have all kinds of, titles for these things, material handler, all kinds of stuff. And DOL never ceases to amaze me with their lexicon.
Well, the Dictionary of Occupational Titles is a joy to read.
I mean, which is surpassed only by some of the lexicon of the SS and the Third Reich, like Final Solution and Special Handling, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the same type of terminology that's used to describe something that's very horrible. But I'm just, I don't know. It would appear to me as though what you were saying about the rich man in Christ is true, because he did say, give all you have to the poor, and the guy said, well, I have connections, and I have this, that, and the other.
I can help you, buddy.
And he said, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Now, some people say in some stories that man's name was Lazarus, and he later raised from the dead. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that is apocryphal.
But anyway, it is easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And if I recall,
not in America. This is an America, Jim, where we have been taught, and we're taught by the religion industry, the people we despise, the Falwells, the Robertsons, Dobsons, the real creeps. We are told that being poor is a sin. We are told that not being as rich as the Almighty Himself is the real sin against God.
Well, Bob, if you tell anybody that, I mean, the thing that you don't say, and this is worse than calling them any epithet or any four-letter word, is to tell someone you don't have the money.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that.
How much does this cost if you can't afford it?
This goes beyond the Falwells and Dobsons and people like that. I mean, in this country, it's a sin not to have the money. And people look at you like you have leprosy.
Yeah.
And they treat you like you have leprosy.
Yeah, indeed.
They do. I mean,
yeah, you're right.
I mean, is that not so?
Sure it is. It's the absolute truth. You know, you can't put $125 Nikes on your kid's feet and he can outgrow it in 4 months. You know, what's wrong with you?
I mean, there's some type of advertisement on TV where this girl comes to her father and she wants a pair of $80 jeans. What does your old dad do? He goes to his laptop and he looks up the stock of the company and the designer. And, you know, she hits her father up for $80 for a pair of jeans, designer jeans, probably those Britney Spears types that rise down at the behind. And then, you know, he's up there, you know, investing in the stock. I mean, you know, I have never seen such shallowness as a part of our culture.
And there's nothing more shallow than Wall Street, Jim. You know, this International Coal Group, like I said, they dumped 30 shares on or 30 cents on a share because of this explosion. But they didn't dump that 30 cents over the death. They dumped it over the fear that the company would have to pay money.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, these things just, they send Wall Street just a dither because they can't handle things like that, and they anticipate these losses, and they want to protect their shareholders. But I don't know. I have periods of optimism, and sometimes I have periods of extreme pessimism. And to tell you the truth, I'm glad I'm out of the world of work, and I'm glad I got out when I did, and I got out when I worked for one of the people that I did, the federal government, because now they're trying to destroy every advantage there is or there was to being a federal worker. They really are. And,
yeah.
You know, this is, and this has been the experimentation, what I'm going on about this, you know, the denial of rights of Title V protection for Homeland Security employees and things like this. This is the model they've used in private industry.
Well, sure it is. And
whether it's private industry being forced on the federal government, which is what Reagan wanted to do, or vice versa, I don't know. But the two are synergistic with one another. And they both spell that the worker gets the shaft.
Barack Obama, who has not, in my opinion, lived up to his promise as a United States senator, at least not yet, did have the gall to come out the other day, and I thought it was pretty bold on his part. He came out and said straightforward that the Republican Party in the United States practices, and you'll get this, and most of the listeners will get this, God knows that the Republican wouldn't understand it, but he said that the Republican Party is an active practitioner right here, right now, of social Darwinism.
Well, of course, it's in the survival of the fittest. And social Darwinism was one of the lead tenets of things like Nazism.
Yes, it was. And that's why I thought it was pretty bold of Obama to say that.
Well, I mean, he knows wherever he speaks. I mean, you know, he comes from an ethnic background of people who were sold, who were beaten, who were treated as chattel and not human beings, and even in our own halls of government were counted as three-fifths of a man. Now, can you imagine that, counting a human being as soul, not as five-fifths or four-fifths, but 60% of a man?
Yeah.
Remember that compromise?
Yes, I do.
I mean, you know, it's just, I try not to think about these things, because when I do, I find my sanity racing toward the edge of a cliff. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when I look back,
but we can't spend all our time looking away. Sometimes we got to look the devil in the eye, and try to stare him down.
And you know, when we look and we talk about people like Joseph Stalin and Adolf Hitler, and we talk about Idi Amin and some of the other
Pol Pot,
yeah, and Ho Chi Minh, for example. I mean, you know, compared to let's take Ho Chi Minh. Compared to these guys we've got in D.C., to me, Ho Chi Minh is a hero.
Oh, you're going to catch hell for that, Jim.
I don't care, because in a way, because he fought for something he believed in.
Well, it's worth remembering that he drafted a Declaration of Independence for the Vietnamese people that was almost word for word off of ours.
Well, you know, listen, I have fought against Ho Chi Minh, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My generation died by the scores because of misunderstandings with that situation. But, you know, the guy was part Lenin, part Gandhi, and the rest Vietnamese.
Yeah.
And he knew what he was doing. I mean, I don't think he was as much of a mass murderer as Mao and Stalin and stuff like that. So my point is this. some of the people whom we decry and denounce, really, if we look at ourselves, we don't have much room to criticize.
No, we don't. We're throwing rocks in a glass house.
Well, that's all I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to be anti-patriotic or anti-American, but I'm simply trying to look, you know, at oneself. And, you know, even Lenin said, it is nothing for us if we allow our crumbs of self-criticism to be dropped from our table and devoured by our enemies. That should mean nothing to us. And I think it's time for this country, if it's going to stay around in its present form, for people to realize that they cannot continue to go as we are. Now, I hope that these hearings in Washington with this lobbyist will do something. But you know something? I have a strange, gnawing suspicion that they'll have a hoopla over it. Some people will give some money back, and K Street will be just in the same business as usual a year from now.
Well, it's not gonna demolish K Street. It's not gonna make it stop happening.
I know. But I mean, you know, you just get really discouraged, and I don't know. I was just emoting here, but you know, your friend Fritz down in New Mexico had some good things to say, and I appreciated that very much. I really did.
Well, thank you for all of your thoughts, Jim. We do appreciate it. And you have yourself a great night, all right?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm not flying any flag with a yellow star on it or whatever. But you know, these people had a right, and what I'm trying to say is, and I'll finish here. For example, look at the Vietnam War. The war that the people we were supporting over there were actually worse. I mean, were actually better. I mean, worse than the North Vietnamese government.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that's the point I'm trying to make about Ho Chi Minh, okay?
Sure.
Because the Saigon regime that we supported with Johnson was so corrupt and so inept that the people there had no real desire to defend it, which is one of the reasons we couldn't do it for them. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. You gotta want it first, and some of that carries back. You know, until workers here want to be treated like human beings, they're going to go on being associates, Jim.
Well, you took the words out of my mouth, so I will leave you. I'll leave you where I found you, my friend.
All right, take care, Jim. No. Thanks. Bye now. And a quick break, and we'll be back for the final half hour or what's left of it, because I ran over the break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before before they pile up in the sink and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Treat me with understanding. Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Mrs. Deer, you're in the road again.
Oh, Ranger, I saw headlights and...
I understand.
Hey, so you're working late, huh?
Yeah, Smokey and I were up thinking of ways to remind people to be responsible for fires they start.
So what you come up with?
We're going to make some radio commercials featuring a ranger and talking animals.
Little sophomoric, don't you think?
Yeah, so?
Remember, only you can prevent wildfires. A public service message from Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ag Council.
Welcome back. 22 minutes before the hour, downhill to 10 o'clock. What a tough night. And I really hope you don't think that anything that I'm... This is not over the top. I believe that I am what I am. And I am the product of my raising. Union people, working people. We've never been part of the Lark's Vomit canape and caviar crowd. I don't want to be part of that crowd. I don't want my kids part of that crowd. I don't want anyone I love being so divorced from reality as to think that a little bit of money makes them different or more human than anyone else. I don't want that. But you know what? There are people who do. This press conference from late last night, early this morning, by Bennett Hatfield. He wants to be different from other people. My God. Listen to just how divorced he is from reality, Bennett Hatfield.
3 hours ago or 10 hours ago, we would have been thrilled with the notion that there's one survivor, because at various times during the course of this rescue effort, we were faced with the bleak prospect that there would be no survivors. So let's not discount the fact that Mr. McCloy has survived. His family has cause for celebration tonight.
His family has cause for celebration? What kind of poor, pitiful example of a member of the human race is Bennett Hatfield? The McCloys have cause for celebration? Has he been so long among the glittering people that he doesn't understand that the survivor probably grieves more or as much as those who lost? Does this man not understand even a little bit that no, the McCloys won't be celebrating because they have more dignity and decency in it? Can you celebrating? Woohoo! I'm alive! The rest of them are dead! Too bad! Woohoo! No, that don't happen! That does not happen. But Bennett Hatfield doesn't understand that. Just like he thinks, well, you know, West Virginians, they're pretty good at that suffering and dying business. That's only because we've been trained to it, Bennett, buddy. Yes, dear?
This is the same guy that said Holler was country talk.
Oh, is that him?
Oh, yeah.
That's country talk. Well, I got an email last night that said, no, Bob, that's not country talk. That's America talk.
Well, the sad thing of it is that goes to show exactly what he thinks of West Virginians.
Yeah, well, so it does. I mean, let's hear that again. Cut four, dear.
Coal miners are a tough breed. They're survivors. They're proud, hardworking West Virginians, and they deal with hardship and deal with it better than many other people do.
Kicked dogs deal better with being kicked than unkicked ones. Do you understand, Bennett Hatfield?
My father was born in 1915, and he went to the mines at 12 years old. He loaded cars by hand, 10 cents a ton, where the boss would tell you that it was all shale.
Slate at the bottom. Yeah.
And slate. And send it out. Have you ever seen what an old miner looks like? He's broken down. He has black lung. Can barely breathe. And the company will tell you that they don't deserve anything.
Well, you don't have black lung. Boy, you were smoking.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, yeah,
way.
That is.
And then this man comes out and puts up $2 million for these families.
Wilbur Ross, Jr.
For the families. And wants to replace their loved ones with money. But yet he's gotten tax cuts. And he thinks this is going to make it all better. Do you think these people are going to forget what this man has done and the lies they've told? And on top of that, bringing in a SWAT team?
Hey, honey, guess what? That $2 million bucks, he writes that off on his taxes.
I realize he writes it off. But talk about scum of the earth. I'm sorry, West Virginia, we've been mined almost 300 years. I heard someone say the other day that strip mining was just scratching the surface of the earth.
Yeah, they said that on CNN.
If you come to West Virginia, you look at the barren moonscape.
You don't have to come
left.
To West Virginia. Go to Google Earth. Go to Google Earth and type in Whitesville, West Virginia.
We're talking about mountains that have been stripped down to nothing.
Well, the mountains that aren't mountains anymore.
The deer die.
And the thing is, that's something that we have. I'm glad you mentioned that, dear, because that's something we have to be cognizant of. This mine disaster cannot be used as an excuse to do more mountain range removal. And then that phrase was used. Well, you know, we don't do much. I heard it. She heard it. We don't do much underground mining anymore. We like to just go in and scratch the surface of the earth to get the coal. It was said.
And another thing, I'd like to thank the UMWA for everything they did. My father was a UMWA member, and they certainly took care of us when I was growing up.
They saved your life.
They saved my life. I was in a car wreck, and they rebuilt me.
Pretty good, too.
When you talk about the union, you better know what you're talking about. And you all know who I'm talking to.
Okay, no sending of private messages, dear.
No,
them West Virginians, they're good at that whole suffering and dying thing. I think they do it better than most other people do. Jesus, criminy.
They don't do it well.
Go to the... My God! He said that in that press room right there at the mine. He stood in that church and told them that he had lied to them. Yeah, but they suffer and grieve better than most anybody else. Wow, you're killing me, dear.
Sorry about that, Bob.
Okie dokie. Great song, though. So we've got one more little piece of sound from Bennett Hatfield. He talked, you know, he said what you just heard about how the McCloys have cause for celebration. Woo, get the party hats out. And it wasn't minutes after talking about the hell and misery that ICG had brought down upon those innocent families. That just didn't last long because he got around to talking about what really mattered.
It's beyond belief. Welcome to the worst day of my life. It's tough.
No, that wasn't it. Two. Oh, I'm sorry, three.
We are a strong, well-managed, financially secure company that has the finest growth potential in the entire coal industry. We are disappointed by the accident here at Sago Mine. We are saddened by the loss of our employees.
Saddened.
But the Sago Mine is but a small piece of the production and the activity and the people that comprise International Coal Group. And we are going to continue to be a successful company. We're going to learn from the accidents that occur and the mistakes that occur and get stronger with every effort. We are going to do well and prosper, and I remain confident in that growth.
We are going to get stronger. Yeah, they're going to get stronger. And they're going to get stronger from the shedding of human blood. Anybody hold a mirror up to Mr. Hatfield lately?
He's dead.
Anybody seen, I don't know, has anybody seen Mr. Hatfield in the same room as garlic? The company is going to get strong. You know, mistakes were made. We're disappointed with the mine explosion. You know why they're disappointed with the mine explosion, Sunshine? They're disappointed with the mine explosion because it hurt the mine. Don't kid yourself. This is how they are. This is what they do. And if you think that I was exaggerating by saying that the lawyers in Charleston, West Virginia, and elsewhere are already busting their butts to figure out how to minimize the amount that they have to pay out for this tragedy that they caused, then you're self-delusional, because that's what they do. They will carry the profits of the company on the backs of their workers. What's the old saying? The machine of industry is oiled with the blood of the workers. And it is. You heard him say it. Well, we'll learn from this, and we'll continue to have growth. Got to have growth. You know, when you've got uncontrolled growth in a human being, they call it cancer. Might we suggest that ICG has become a bit cancerous? And Wilbur Ross Jr. wants to set up a fund. Boy, howdy, he's put $2 million. He's a billionaire! Can you count to a billion, Johnny? $1 million, $2 million. And $2 million? God, that's almost as offensive as when after the tsunami last year. That's almost as offensive as when George Bush said, well, you know, we're going to send him $395. $2 million? No. Wilbur Ross Jr., we'll take you seriously when you put $100 million in the fund. And when you don't write it off on your taxes. Because it's your fault, Wilbur. Your greed killed those 13 men. Your greed. Yes, it did. Greed kills. What was the old slogan during the 60s? Speed kills. Not in the 21st century. Greed kills. And it kills, you know, one at a time, two at a time, three at a time. I appreciate everybody's comments this evening. And again, you know, if you want to continue to sound off, you're welcome to via email, and I'll share that with the listeners as we go on. For those who tuned in expecting to have a scintillating discussion about the corruption of the Republican Party and what it means to have Jack Abramoff busted, I apologize. We will get back to your regularly scheduled broadcast. But these last 3 days, I don't... And understand, yeah, it's about West Virginians, and that's where this show originates, and that's where my heart lies. But there's a hell of a lot of John Donne in this, too. There's a whole bunch of "send not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee." Workers die in West Virginia keeping lights on in Florida and Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi and Tennessee and North and South Carolina. Workers die in West Virginia because some people can't be, and I've mentioned it, can't be bothered to turn the damn lights off when they leave the room. Workers die in West Virginia just like workers, you know, just like, my God! Was it a little more than a year ago that a strip mine company in Virginia rolled a 3-ton rock down on top of a little tiny boy named Jeremy Davidson? What was that, Appalachia, Virginia? They were working illegally on an unpermitted section of the mine, and they dropped a boulder on a little boy, and they were fined $15,000 for doing it. That little boy was only worth $15,000. Because, you see, coal companies measure human flesh in dollars. Now, I grew up with the little in the basement of the Baptist church as a child with the little old blue-haired ladies teaching me those simple things like love, you know. And Jesus said, love your neighbor. And, you know, it made good sense. And Jesus, you know, and when you're being taught by the little old blue-haired ladies, you know, it's simple things. Don't take that toy away from that kid. You wouldn't want that kid to come take that toy away from you. It's simple. It's easy. It's only when you factor greed into the equation that it gets complicated. Don't drop that boulder on that little boy. But wait, we won't make enough money if we don't drop the boulder on the little boy. No! Jesus, no! Don't leave that mine sit idle with no one to go in and test for it. Don't send men into a mine that's not ready to be worked. Don't do that. People will die. But if we don't, we won't make enough money, and our shareholders will be mad at us, and those guys have to die. Because there's money involved. But it doesn't have to be a coal miner. It doesn't have to be a little boy in his pajamas in his bed asleep in the middle of the night. God, it happens all over the United States every damned day. Workers are maimed and workers are killed, and people go through 3 years through law school and study real hard so they can go to work for the really big giant corporation and spend their lives screwing people. You know, plaintiffs' lawyers who sue doctors and sue corporations are painted by the Republicans as some sort of predators. And maybe there are a few who file so-called junk lawsuits. I haven't seen any in a while. But you know the lawyers I feel sorry for? I feel sorry for the lawyers that represent coal companies and industrial giants and poisoners and killers and maimers. Because they live in this bubble where nothing that they do has any consequence. It's 5 minutes until 10 o'clock on the East Coast, and somewhere in this state, I'm not kidding you, there is a lawyer who is working right now for International Coal Group trying to cut the losses that will come out of this depravedly indifferent manslaughter. They're already working on it. They know they can't be sued, but at least they can minimize the damage from the workers' comp claims. And you know what? Here's the gross part. Here's the part that makes it tough to keep dinner down. They think they're doing the right thing. Can you imagine that? Is that person an American? Is that person your fellow citizen? I will leave I'll leave the answer to you. And in general, we will leave you now for the night. We'll try to get back to normal tomorrow night, I promise. I promise. The show tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor, engineered by Randy Kerbway. Our good friend Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream that you listen to and also takes care of the archiving. Remember, Ben, when you've got a little spare money, because Ben won't send you a bill. He'll just do what he does and rely on you to do the right thing. Also, we appreciate the efforts of the folks at RadioPower.org. It's great to be listed with you guys, and great to have the Radio Power listenership sharing their time with us. The show is brought to you every night, of course, by the West Virginia Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Remember, they're building the American dream. And always, always, RMR, it's all for you.